Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
To Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper.
Well, hey.
So, oddly enough, so we're starting the show late because we got into some sort of it was a debate. It wasn't a debate, really. It was just discussion based upon Boova's in a ethics class.
Yep.
At school, and the question was about can there be a moral authority? Where does that type of authority come from?
Yep.
That kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it devolved into ultimately the ruination of Europe. So anyway, things you would have heard had we turned on the microphones earlier.
You're welcome for not turning the microphones on earlier, because you have probably either already taken your college ethics course and did wonderfully, or you're never going to take one and don't care. And we appreciate you either way.
So the underlying assumption or the underlying question when it comes to God as a moral authority, hinges on a lot of the prime concerns that people have about the God of the Bible. So, like, things that they're uncomfortable with. Did God order the killing of the Canaanites? Did God, why was he okay with sacrificing, anyway, all the different things that are in the Bible, right? What?
Well, I didn't know if you were going to finish that sentence. I just heard, was he okay with sacrificing?
I moved ahead like two other examples, and then I forgot where I was going with the, it was the...
Sacrificing Isaac?
Yeah, sacrificing Isaac. Okay. That's where I was going, and then I had like two other options in my mind. And then I couldn't.
That's because there's already been 15 minutes of this conversation.
That's right. I'm really distracted
because one of our cameras is looking at a blank arm, and one is looking at Boova, and none is looking over here.
No, yeah, there's one on Dan.
Well, not.
You're on the bottom.
There, we gotta get Nick.
Yeah, yeah.
Boom,
did you
on me?
Did you
point two to you? Is that not what you wanted?
Okay. No, put one on Nick.
Nick Harris is over here alone in the dark with no cameras.
All right.
There,
hey,
now I'm engaged because, you know, ADHD prohibits me
and
from paying
attention.
And now it
looks like I'm wearing a bikini any longer.
All right, anyway, so that's not what we have going on
now
the show today.
Now I'm distracted again.
So Dan and I had opposite reactions to that. I looked the other direction intentionally.
I didn't say it in a positive way. I'm not attracted or anything.
I hope not.
Thanks, all right, Dan. So here's what we got going on the show today. There was an article in the Huffington Post this week about Jesus being the first transgender man.
I've read that.
Did you? Did you read that one?
I don't know why I read it. I don't know. Why would I read that?
Why would you read that?
I don't know. I just wanted to see how ridiculous are you people.
Yeah.
I can't wait to read it tonight.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to take a glance at this. And hey, here's the point is not to discuss the veracity of the article. My question is probably three deeper, which is, like, what is the thing here? There's some of the things that I don't quite understand, like, of people who want or otherwise reject Jesus. I like to, they put a lot of effort into something that they don't think is true. And so I don't know, I'm just kind of.
We want confirmation from someone we don't believe in.
Yeah, we have.
So, like, wait.
wait. Like if we're the group of fools, like, here's the deal, I don't go around poking groups of fools, trying to get in some kind of argument with them. In fact, Paul warns Timothy of that very thing. You see a gaggle of fools, you leave them be over there. Don't get tied up in their word stuff, their genealogy business. Stay out of kind of those types of arguments. It's just not your business.
I don't care if Santa Claus really approves of what I'm doing today.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because I don't, well, I'm not going to say out loud, but I have some doubts.
I just don't care about his opinion.
His opinion is not important to me.
Yeah, he's on the level of a Yeti.
So why would the Huffington Post, to put in energy into, oh, by the way, Jesus.
Yeah. Well, that's a name drop right there.
Yeah.
Like,
I read it, I guess, but here's the thing. It's like,
yeah, it's about hits. It's not necessarily whether or not you like the article.
Well, they're getting money.
Articles
yeah.
you like are the worst.
It's about
articles
sales
you
revenue.
Don't like are the reason you do it.
Well, so let me, hold on. Let's read a bit of the article first, because then we're going to come back to that point.
All right.
Okay. So, it was the article titled, Jesus, the First Transgender Man. The current flap in conservative Christian circles about bathroom access, that's not current. It's like a year old, is a bit baffling. They shout about God not making mistakes, as if God only works in binaries and anything falling outside of black and white cannot be from him. But we don't have a black and white God, semicolon. Creation is so full of color and variation that it's incomprehensible how we Christians struggle to pare him down to the limited palette of our individual expectations. Well, this is a we and our conversation.
I noticed that. So they're calling themselves Christians.
Okay, interesting.
The author.
The worst offenders are the Christians. That is not a... Never mind. Who claim to take the Bible literally. Of course, they don't actually do that. Unnecessary semicolon. I can't take this whole article. They impose their own filters on stories and phrases to fit their particular ideology. If they really did as they claim to do, they would quickly see that Jesus must be, by their own exegetical rules, the first transgender man. Let's take a look at what the Bible and Christianity tell us. The teaching of the church from ancient days through today is that Jesus received his fleshly self from Mary. The church also teaches that Jesus is the new Adam, born of the new Eve. Now, Eve is a fascinating creature for many reasons. The Bible tells us she is the first example of human cloning, which I touched on in this post. But the fun doesn't stop there. Were you having fun in that sentence, Booba?
The first example of human cloning.
Well, I mean, he didn't take the rib and produce another human.
Agreed.
So, I mean, that's clever and everything. I just don't.
Agreed.
I don't know about the fun part. See, but the fun. Oh yeah. Let's see. If we take the Genesis account in its what? That's a like who had? I'm sorry, I'm just getting distracted.
Read the article, Ben.
In it is literal meaning. A possessive it's doesn't split, Bova. I can't trust the contents of this article at all.
Agreed. Okay. I thought we started with that with the premise.
As conservative Christians demand that we do, she's also the first case of a transgender woman. God reached into Adam, pulled out a bit of rib bone, and grew Eve from that XY DNA that Adam's into Adam's companion. She was created genetically male and yet transformed into woman. She's got us there, Booba.
No.
I feel like we're pinned on a wall here.
Oh,
like
totally.
One of those walls
that people
look at in junior high science.
This isn't God that we're talking about here. This is some weird geneticist.
Yeah, I mean, when you take a DNA from a man and you ultimately create a new human being, which is generally birth and all babies happen, they do all end up transgender ladies.
And clones of each other.
Anyway, okay. Then along came Jesus, and the whole pattern is both repeated and reversed. The first couple's refusal to cooperate is turned around by Mary's yes, and the second act of cloning occurs. The Holy Spirit comes upon the second Eve, and the child takes flesh from her and is born of her flesh, born with XX chromosome pairing. Why is she saying that?
So they're saying because it was an immaculate conception and there was no father, born of her flesh means her DNA, which means there was no Y chromosome given in the birth of Jesus, meaning that he has to be an XX chromosome human being, so he's transgender.
Oh, okay, I get it. So the limitation of an immaculate conception here
is within the DNA.
Has to be restrictive of not providing an XY chromosome.
Right. There's no problem with dealing with the fact that we're willing to admit that the Holy Spirit was able to make a woman with child.
Right.
No problem with the science of that statement. But we have a problem with the science of, well, that child can't be a boy.
Has to be off the table.
Has to be an XX chromosome, therefore cannot be a male. Therefore, considering him to be a male means he's transgender because genetically he's a woman.
I mean, that seems like here's the deal. Holy Spirit making a lady with child is a leap in rationality because it's irrational.
Right.
I'm with you there. However, once you accept that premise, I don't understand this one.
I may be breaking this down way too quick or way too early, but this is the problem that I see with so many people that are willing to take parts of this as 100% science that has to make complete rational black and white sense, right? Like XX chromosome without a Y chromosome or sex cell from man cannot create an X or XY male baby, right? Like that is where we're drawing the line. But we are perfectly fine with existing in the place that we have a supreme being of a God that created everything, is perfectly mm-hmm. capable of grabbing the rib out of a man while he's sleeping and then make it into a full woman so that he has a companion to live life with. But that's cloning and we have to worry about the genetics of it. So let's do some Punnett squares to figure out what Jesus should have looked like. This is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right, here we go. States that do not support trans person's right to choose the restroom that fits their identity demand that bathroom usage be based on a person's biological sex. One can imagine a future in which state license requires not only a vision test, but also a genetic test, so that bouncers proofing at bathroom doors have something tangible to review. Yeah, that seems in the cards. And that means that if Jesus and Eve were walking around today, perhaps shopping at the mall for a Father's Day gift, they'd have to swap restrooms. Now, Jesus could surely manage to finesse his way around a woman's room, but poor Eve... Okay, that's enough. So, I mean, what are they... what am I missing here, Booba? Hey, who is it? First of all, who is it? I mean, this goes back to the reason of the site that it is on and the purpose of the story. Who is this convincing? Right? Is there somebody?
I can't answer. I have no idea who this is like, for or who it's.
Who could this be targeted to? That's like on the fence. You know, maybe people should stick to the bathrooms that they were saying. But Jesus was a transgender man. Never you mind.
The problem is, I think you're giving too much the medal of this publication. I think they don't have to have a target audience any longer to change minds. It's no longer about changing minds. It's no longer about being informative or about bringing new light to certain things that they didn't know. It's about hits. It's about clicks.
Well, right, but like, and I'm going to ignore for the fact, for the moment, that I clicked on this because I
agreed. No, it works is the problem.
Well, so move one step back. Why do websites care about hits?
Money.
How does it get the money?
Well, ultimately, the more hits they have, the more they can start selling their product. If that's with advertising or if that's with certain people, the more their popularity is, the more they can charge to get money.
For people to advertise, right?
Right, like, exactly.
That's how they
totally,
make money.
Completely.
Now, here's the thing. Let's say I go to this website and I'm like, oh, Jesus is a transgender man. What the flying hell's going on in there?
Right.
I'm not
going
to buy anything here.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to decide to like renew my Amazon Prime subscription because I found out that Jesus was a transgender male. Like, that... It doesn't lead to that. But, however, you're a rational person. I think that we're operating under a false guise if we think that the people that come to this are going to be rational people.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is, though, is like with articles like this, if you're a person who buys advertising online, right, and someone goes, hey, man, I got 10 million hits, and like... 7 million of those hits are from people who are going to disagree with your article and are not going to hang around the site looking for other news to read. Like, I feel like your advertising dollars are overinflated.
Well, let's say you're an advertiser. Who do you advertise? Or what company advertises on an article like that? I mean, I'm just trying to think strategically. I mean, they're probably not going to sell a lot of rainbow flags because they're probably not the ones looking at the article. Yeah. Maybe a Bible website.
Let's see. Hold on. Here we go. The top. See now. So here's the problem with some of the website traffic. It's like if you buy Google, if you go through Google and you do AdWords and stuff, it's not like you don't get to pick specific articles, right?
It just does it for you.
Relevant content. Because the top one here is bookstore.com. Everything you need for campus life. Shop the bookstore.
So people who buy books read articles.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the Rumpelpimple, The Adventures of Rumpelpimple. But that's her book.
Rumpelpimple?
Yeah.
Rumpelpimple?
She wrote books about Rumpelpimple.
Interesting.
The person who wrote the article did?
Pubescent child?
Yeah. Suzanne DeWitt Hall. Anyway.
I just think it comes down to what Jesus said. Like, we all are sheep, basically. Like, you know, like, all the devil do is switch everything what God do. You know, like, they don't care that what they putting out. They know they not going to get everybody's attention, but the people that they can get... That's what they stick to. The same job we have. Like, we know we're not going to be able to bring everybody to Jesus, but the people that we do, we happy about, you know? Like, so, I mean, I just think that we see and people just draw to the wrong thing sometimes with lack of information, I guess. Like,
that's true. I mean, like, this is, it's not like it's well argued, right?
Right.
Like, it's a shallow premise that people can be like, oh. Like, if you're not paying attention, you're just like, oh, okay, I see what you're saying.
Maybe. Immaculate conception, XY chromosome.
Yeah, okay. I don't get that at all. Okay.
I don't understand anything about chromosomes, but I like it.
That affirms what I think about the transgender debate, and so, okay,
right.
I think I'm good with it, right? And so, so the follow-up question with that, so I would say this is largely worthless. This is not changing anybody's mind. However, right. It helps affirm people who wanted to know this anyway. Mm-hmm. And it was weird. I was reading a study for last week, and it said that it's extremely difficult – in your mind, the way that your mind is kind of formed and the synapses and stuff work, to learn information that you think you already know. because you won't pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So like if you're hearing somebody talk and you're like, yes, I know where this is going, or I know this line of thought, you simply will not learn anything new, even if there's new information being spoken, because you're under the premise that you already understand these things. Mm-hmm. And so this is not intending to convince someone of something that they don't already know, right? Yeah. It's not a law. It's not a good argument. It's not well formed. It doesn't handle rebuttals. Like, it's not intended to do that. It's intended simply to affirm something that someone already thinks, using something that they think would be a gotcha at someone who disagrees with them, right? That's kind of the point.
Yeah.
So the question then is, how do you make sure you're not doing that from our perspective? Like, what do you got? Faithwire.com, The Christian Post, sometimes Christianity Today and stuff like that, right? So, or Godvine. Every freaking 10th thing I see on Facebook, some jolly who's got something from Godvine about something going on. It's like a YouTube for God videos.
Oh, okay.
So, mm-hmm. And they're not implicitly bad things, but like, how do you make sure that we're not doing the same thing? Like, we're just puffing up pieces to say, see, Tim Tebow loves Jesus. That's why he hugged that old lady. And then, like, that's why you're wrong about Tim Tebow. And so I know, what are the things we should be cautious about, or things to make sure to include if you're otherwise producing things, or things that we talk about here, so that we're not guilty of the same thing?
I think the first thing we need to do is recognize that that's what we do constantly. Like, that's all we do. I haven't really seen a lot of Christian publications or any of those. I mean, obviously through here I have, but like in my own time, I don't read a lot of articles from Christian places.
Simply
because I don't think they do much. I haven't really read anything that's been something that changed something for me or changed something for someone that I know. It's all intended to be, hey, let's build each other up, but let's not meaningfully build each other up through fellowship. Let's just post some stuff about Jesus that you already knew, so you can go, heck yeah, I knew that about Jesus, or I knew that about the tabernacle, or I was 100% certain of that's how we're supposed to act within our society by being a Christ follower. We aren't doing that kind of stuff, and that's what we first need to recognize is that that's our biggest problem.
So I would agree, just to jump on board with that, like, I would agree that a lot of what we produce are either an affirmation of facts
mm-hmm.
or an affirmation of emotions. The emotion you're feeling is okay.
Right.
Right? So, like, whatever it is might be going on, something you might be concerned about, like, yeah, I'm
a bunch of Christians go through that. It's okay.
Yeah. And so, like, again, it's not explicitly a bad thing.
No.
But, like, we need to recognize that some of the things that we put under the banner of outreach, some things that we put under the banner of disciple making and
right.
making arguments and changing the world and fighting and making sure truth is proliferated, just know what it is that you're actually doing. So I would agree. I think that's kind of a risk.
Yeah, and I think that you're boxing this correctly would be, we do incorrectly call things outreach, and we do incorrectly call things discipleship, and we say that we're really getting out there and spreading the good news through our publication, and it's like, are you really? Like, are you really getting into this, or are you throwing something out there because you're paid to do it, and you think, because it's not bad, then it must be inherently good, right? Like, because the implications of this article are Jesus-related and have facts in them, they can't be bad, they have to be good. It's not necessarily true. Just because it does say the good news in it, just because it's got good information about Christianity or what it looks like to be a Christ follower or anything like that, doesn't mean that you're actually doing good work through that and that people are actually coming to Jesus with that kind of stuff. And I don't know of any publication that does that well, that is trying to brand themselves under an outreach organization to the lost, to seek and save the lost, right? Like, if you guys know of any, please tell me. I'd love to hear it. I don't see that within them.
So, Dan, you've been, like you came from, in your younger years, right? Like, tapes, pamphlets, magazines, up through kind of the digital revolution and the proliferation of Christian content.
Right.
Like, would you say that has been, do you think this is true in your experience, and has it been consistent, or is that something that's been changing over the years?
I think it's always been that way. I remember the first time I started toying around with books. I'm not like an outstanding writer by any means. But I had this column and I made some books but I started studying the industry of book writing.
Yep.
And it was, to be honest, it was really hard for me to read books after that, because I thought, well, any Yahoo can do this. I mean, all I need is a little bit of marketing and someone who says, hey, we're going to make this sell, and that's how it sells. You know, it's not that the content is any better than some other Joe down the road who could maybe write even better, but they don't have the name, they don't have the marketing. And so it's kind of true with everything. I mean, like it's all about getting the clicks, getting the attention, getting the people to look at you or to buy your product or the advertising that goes with the product. And so everything is more geared toward that than the actual content of, we're trying to really help people out here. I mean, they hope to do both. I'm not saying it's all bad.
No, right. Intentions are certainly good.
Right. I mean, they have to, you know, make a living. I mean, I get that.
Yep.
But it is a little disheartening, a little disillusioning maybe is a better word. You know, it's just like, wow, it's kind of a game. It's all a game. And, you know, whether it's music or even what translation of Bible, you know, people read, it's all a game.
Yeah, you know, actually, mm-hmm. It's interesting you brought that up because, like, I've noticed, Dan, I don't know, have you looked at the CSB? The Christian Standard Bible. So it used to be the
Holman.
Yeah,
Holman Christian Standard Bible.
Yeah. So what's been interesting is a lot of the people that were strongly advocating for the ESV, like I've noticed quite a few of those guys writing articles in support of, doing podcasts and stuff in support of the CSB.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I mean, I got like a promotional copy. It seems okay. I mean, I wasn't blown away or anything, but like What I thought was interesting is like I just felt like there was a level of dishonesty here because like not one of those guys said, "Hey, here I really supported the ESV and still do. Here's why I read this one or here's where I think it is valuable." Like something, if you were highly advocated for this, like if you everyone would ask you that if you switched political candidates, if you're like Bob Dole all the way and then you switch to GW. Like someone's gonna go, "Hey man, what's with the switch?" and you have to answer for
yourself. What happened with Bob Dole?
Because you were campaigning,
right?
And so mm-hmm. I just like it seems disingenuous, especially about something so important about what you're leaning on. That like I would feel like I would owe someone an explanation and say, "I actually still like this other one. I use both. Here's what I really enjoy. I thought they did a great job about the CSB." Blah blah blah. But like, no, I just didn't see some of that. Maybe I missed it, but like. It feels way more marketed oriented and propagandized, as opposed to just someone saying, "Hey, they've done some solid work. I think they made some improvements. I'm digging on this one," and that wasn't really the vibe.
But it just go back to what Dan said a couple weeks ago. Like, if Jesus is not the base of your work, like the center of your work, then what you're doing is only to glorify yourself, basically. You know, and I mean, it don't give praise to God that you do that type of stuff. Like, because it take reading the Bible daily. Like, if you're not doing that, then you're not inspired by the Holy Spirit. So, therefore, you're not really, you just doing something. You know, like, you have to be in your Bible daily. Like, it's a moment-by-moment type of thing. You know, and, like, most people like that, they don't really grow later on, like, mature in the Bible because you get to a certain point sometimes where you feel like, back to what you said, like, you know something, so it's not really intriguing to you anymore.
Yeah.
So if you're not really focusing on the Bible every day to learn new things and be guided by the Spirit, then what you're doing is not based around Jesus and it's just work, you know, that don't mean stuff is meaningless.
No, that's true. And so I think where there's a connection here, even to the broader world, I work in a corporate environment. And one of the things that we've been looking at, pretty firmly over the last few years is like, what are our measures of success and are they the right measures? Now, every reasonable person attempts to ask that question, but like, part of what allows, the contribution of noise into the world, and Booba, I think you can attest to this just with some of the stuff that you're doing outside of here too, is take social media for example. It's like, hey, we need a social media presence. Well, why? Like, I mean, just because you want it? Like, right. You just want to be impressed with yourself?
Uh-huh.
Like, is that doing what you want it to do?
Right.
And so, like, we looked at, we're looking at all kinds of ways. How do we communicate with people? Well, we send an X letter in this circumstance. I think, why? Why do we send that letter? Well, we want people to react this way or to get this type of information. Great. Is that type of information on there? And are they reacting that way? How do we know that? And so, like, what we find, and this is true everywhere, not just in my industry, but, like, there's a lot of people who are doing things that is that and they're being done successfully, but they are accomplishing none of what they want done.
Yep.
They're like, hey, we expect, and so like our discipleship stuff is kind of like that.
Yep.
It, like,
very much so.
It runs risks where does it, are faithful people doing it? Yes. Are they doing, on its face value, are they doing godly things? Absolutely. Do they have the right heart for it? Is mm-hmm. it touching people? Like, are some people responding? Sure. And so, so it's easy to say, especially in the light of gospel stuff, where we're like, I plant seeds. So like, we get real satisfied with just chucking crap out and be like, mm-hmm. seeds are being thrown. And so, it's difficult because sure, if you're just chucking stuff out, you're bound to clonk somebody on the head who's like, right. you know what, Holy Spirit says, come into your place. mm-hmm. But like, is it a reasonable thing to step back every once in a while and say, look, what am I actually trying to accomplish? And is that being accomplished? And if it is not, and this is where I think Nick Harris's point comes into play, like, I might be accomplishing bin level things.
Right.
I'm being faithful in the means that I thought were good. I'm measuring by the standards that I think are appropriate, and I'm hitting the mark. Yay for bin level things, except for the gospel is a Jesus level thing. And so, you have to step back. And here's what it doesn't be. What makes this hard, especially with gospel stuff, is that God might have you work on the rails to pick up one dude over 50 years, and that's just your gig, and that guy was hard to get, but Jesus loves him and wants him in. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the deal. And maybe you just got some kind of silver tongue and some sweet hair, and you just happened to pick up 1,000 people for bending over in the street. All right? And so who knows? But like, it's hard to be discerning. A, if you're not in scripture. B, if you're not constantly praying, listening for what God has going on in your life and who he might have, for you to be working for and what you're supposed to be up to. So what makes it difficult for, like, some people have left very successful ministries to go something, like mega church type stuff. And they went to do something completely different. And like, how could you give that up? Well, because God was in the other thing. And he's got other people to handle this stuff. And so, it's tough. The tangibles are tough there because, really all I'm saying is you're going to have to pray through it. Just take a step back and say, look, am I up to what God is up to, or am I up to what I'm up to? Am I measuring by what God would measure? Am I measuring by what I think is good? But just know that I think that's a risk. Like, hey, we need to get a publication out. Hey, we need to make sure we're on the Facebook. Hey, do we need to live stream something? Hey, we need to, you know, get a big sign or something. And like, none of those are bad. All of those are good things when they're mm-hmm. pointing to good gospel stuff.
Right.
It's just, the question is presence is not enough. At some point you got to step back and say, look, is this accomplishing what I wanted to accomplish?
Yeah. We video our services every week and throw them out on YouTube and throw them out on Facebook and all this stuff. And I think every week I think to myself, why?
Right.
You know, so the 12 people can watch this? Some get seen more than others. But I mean, it's not like we have huge numbers.
Right.
You know, it's like, I guess if it was any more effort or work, I wouldn't do it. But yeah. It's really not that much work. I mean, you know, 5 minutes of blah, blah, hit a button and go. But, there's things we do that churches are known. I mean, we just were famous for this, pouring tons of labor into something that has zero return.
Yeah.
And we do it just because.
Return, though, Dan, because I think, like, what we do and what you guys introduced me to do is basically not be comfortable. Like, you come here knowing everything about the Bible, but you're not comfortable with what you know. You learn more every time we come here. So it's definitely a reason. And we take it out in the world and, you know, we try our hardest to reach out to people and do things. So, I mean, I just figure, like, that's what's wrong with other people. Like, they get comfortable with what they know already. So, you know, like, this is a learning-based place where we at. You know, like, even though I learn a lot of stuff from you guys, so it's like, I can know what I know, but I'm not really comfortable with what I know. You know, like, I know I could always grow in faith.
Right.
And, yeah.
Like, that's what deceit come in at. You know, like, the devil wants you to... The first thing that he take away from you is the word, the living word. The first thing to go is the word. So once you do that, you destroy your first defense. You know, like, that's the only defense that you need is the word. And once he take that away from you, it's gone. You know, he can try all other type of tricks, but it's like when you don't be comfortable, you continue to grow in faith. And once you have faith, you can keep doing your job. So, I mean.
So I think that's kind of the tough part because, like, I think what Dan is getting at is that, sometimes we're kind of just chasing ourselves around, mm-hmm. right? All the other churches are doing this. Seems like we should be doing it.
Right.
And it doesn't mean, like, there are, there are certainly reasons to do things like that, right? Like, there's a reason we do this, even though I'm very well aware that I don't think there's a ton of people listening. But I know of a distinct value, both to myself and to people around me, and I say it is worth it then, because we're evaluating for what I think are the right things. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I've prayed on. There was a time, I think, like 3 years ago, where I said, like, you know, is this worth keeping to do? Like, mm-hmm. I think by a worldly standard, I don't know that the place is a success around here. Like, it's
but that's the deceit that come in that where it wants you to break your first defense. You know how beneficial it is to you to come in and do this. You know, be around these guys and learn more.
So that's the point. Is like, I think, like, I tangibly, like, going through and evaluating for the right things that I think are in line with whatever it is that God is working on in my life and the life of others. Then I say, worldly perspective or not, yes. You keep going. The opposite risk is to say, hey, look, man, if you're going to be a church, you got a live stream. And like, I think what Dan's point is like, well, I don't know. That may not be true. Like, it may be valuable. It may not be valuable. Are we evaluating it through the right lens as opposed to, well, these are the 10 things that, dude on internet says you need to do. Dude could be dead right in his context. Mm-hmm. Is that right in everybody's context? So it's like, it's just taking the time to step back and saying, why are we doing what we're doing? Are we putting the resources in the right spot? And are we measuring things by God's standard and not our own? And then maybe all 10 rock, maybe 2 of his list to rock, or maybe his list is terrible and you gotta create your own stuff. And I think it's asking the right question of yourself, asking the right question of God, and then be willing to say, look, if God says, look, I don't care about that YouTube, then we're like, okay, we're just gonna stop. We don't care.
Right. And I think that the reevaluation of our practices when it comes to discipleship or when it comes to just outreach and stuff like that, I think that's important because we get this, we are bad at this as a church, and I mean this as the whole entire American church. We are bad at this because we cookie cutter our outreach. Like, we think that, you know, like you said, if one church live streams and does that, we should all do that. And if one church has a cookie ministry or whatever that does cookies every Sunday, that we all should do that and all this different stuff. But we get stuck in the traditions of trying to keep up with everyone else rather than actually trying to evaluate what we're supposed to be doing from God's perspective and listening to what he's got for us. Because, I mean, we may be really great at live streaming, but we're not really good at stopping on the side of the road and helping somebody's got a busted down truck. Like, we may be really good at figuring out the whole cookie ministry thing, but when it comes to actually going downtown or going to a part of town or, heck, walking across the hallway from your cubicle and talking to someone where serious, honest, Christ kingdom work happens, if we get stuck in what we think works versus what God's telling us what we actually need to do, that is a serious problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And the problem, you know what the problem is? It's like serving people with cookies is good.
It totally
it's
is.
Fine.
Yeah, there's nothing. And that's the trap.
Yeah.
Is because we say to ourselves, there's nothing possibly bad about serving cookies to people. Well, there's nothing. Yeah. And I mean, unless you're serving cookies to a diabetic person, don't do that. But like, there's nothing possibly bad about a live stream where we're preaching truth. And that's
right.
A good thing.
Well, because there's that church in California that you know, 14,000 people were baptized because they got cookies.
Right, exactly.
Like, there we go. We're doing cookies.
Exactly. And it totally makes sense. It really does. Yeah. Like, obviously, you're not gonna mimic something that doesn't work. There's not some dude that's handing up bookmarks that's just got Jesus on it, and he says, I love doing this and have been for 60 years. Here's the deal, though. I look at that. If God told that guy to hand out those bookmarks because of one random dude named Randy 37 years ago that came to the Lord because he said, I didn't know Jesus looked like that, and then he opened up a Bible for the first time, who am I to say don't do that anymore? However, that's the trap, is make certain that you're not just following trends. It's not just about what seems big and what seems popular. With discipleship and with all that outreach and stuff like that, you have to constantly be on listening, God playing God level stuff, going, hey, where do you want me going? Where is this supposed to go?
Just live
you want cookie ministry? If not, okay, tell me where I need to go.
Mm-hmm. It's like the Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch.
Oh,
God
totally.
Told Philip to go to a specific spot. So all the churches showed up the next week and no one was there. But they're still showing up.
That you know? Is the best example.
That is amazing.
That's what went through my mind as you were saying
that's
that.
That's amazing. Like, yeah, the eunuch already got baptized and ran home to tell more people about Jesus. He's not here anymore.
There's 100 churches there waiting for another guy to come.
There's got
to
be another eunuch.
Philip's like, you should have seen it. Here's the specifics of where I was at. They're like, great, we're going too. He's like, no, he's gone already.
No, I was really talking to
Philip to go to talk to me?
That's awesome.
I gotta, you need to do a pamphlet with cookies.
Put up a sign here, just commemorate it.
All the apostles just show up there one day.
Yeah, just live in your context.
Man. Yeah,
like, live in your context. God will explode it as is necessary.
Yeah.
If your context is streaming, do it. Making cookies, I love it. Like, what? Just live in yours.
And by the way, I am that guy.
Yeah.
I am one of the 100 churches that show up the next week.
Dan.
I mean,
Dan's there looking for Philip.
I'm not just criticizing.
It's not inherently a bad thing to do. There's nothing wrong with that stuff. However, if you're doing that, in lieu of what God is calling you to do, that's where it's the problem. That's where the trap is.
It's laziness. I don't have time
exactly
to know what God wants me to do. God wants him to do that.
Exactly.
Let's do it.
Yeah, it's looking at outreach as a marketing campaign rather than a God-driven thing. It's, well, this demographically makes sense.
I'm done with this show. This is
stupid. People in this city do this. People in that city do that. Let's do that rather than, well, God, what do you want me to do for this city? Or what do you want me to do for the dude I'm passing right now?
Yeah.
That's where it's important, and it's live within your context and live within your means there.
All right. You're listening to Life.
I'm never going to forget the Philip thing. It's amazing. Hunter Church show up next week.
Yeah, we're from Corinth. Can we help?
No, Corinth, you're the worst. Get out of here.
Put this pamphlet.
I had to get out of there. Do you know what those guys are doing?
Paul had to write us a couple letters.
Oh, man.
Hey, you think...
You know what we should do? We should do a response from the churches to Paul.
Hey, Paul, here's what we were thinking. Hey, you think the guy that delivered the letters from Paul to the church of Corinth peaked? Like, did he know what was
He's like, oh, buddy.
I want to watch him read this one.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm giving this to Phil. This is totally for you,
Paul,
buddy.
Is speaking directly to him. I got to make sure this gets in his hands.
All right, you're listening to Life from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. If you want to catch us during the week, you can go to lifefromthepath.org, and you can kiss posters of kittens. You can catch patch clips from the show, including performances by the likes of Michael Leverton. He was popping
indeed.
He popped in my mind this week, and I'm confident, like, before the summer is out, we will have Crystal Joy back in. She's got another book coming.
And,
very nice.
Getting ready to release, and so we'll have a chance to hook up with her. But you can watch her her interview, and she participated in Mike's Is It Love?
Is This Love Game
Show? And so you can
Is
go.
Is This Love?
That's
I've
the
never
one.
Watched that
one.
I missed that week. I can't remember where I was, but I watched it.
What a mistake, Dan.
Exactly.
I know. I was like, man, I wish
I
was there.
Good news is you can go to lifefromthepath.org, and you can check that out any time.
Dan was in his office going, I want to know what love is. Won't you let it show me? All right. I tell you what, Boova, I'm going to have to push for another week. The seven things evil is not. It's too big of a thing. So I'll leave it up, and we'll hit it next week. Let's do some advice.
All right, man. People need some help. Dear Live from the Path, I'm in my late 20s and have a male companion who is 30-plus years older than I am. We were together for a while, then stopped so we could both try to find someone closer to our ages. Neither of us did. We recently started seeing each other again. Although we are good for each other and compatible in many ways, we are realistic that our relationship isn't long-term for major reasons.
That's harsh.
I'm glad you thought that too. He's in his late 50s. He ain't going to make it much longer. I want children. He's happy with grandchildren. He wants to travel after retirement. I'm just starting my career. We live for the moment and don't dwell too much on the future. My problem is, this time I'm really falling in love with him. Last time I was reluctant to become emotional because I was afraid of getting hurt. But this time, I'm all in. Can any good come of this? We meet each other's relationship needs in the here and now, but is the end just heartbreak?
It is every time.
That is the most bleak thing I've ever heard you say this entire radio show.
We take vows till death do us part. I mean, I could get hit by an ice cream truck tonight. That doesn't mean I shouldn't get married. I guess that's my point.
I thought you were just trying to advocate that every relationship is going to end with hurting you.
It is. I mean,
thanks, Dan.
I'm well aware that either myself or my wife will die first. One of us will be alone.
Right.
You know, I don't know when or how, or that's not a reason to not pursue this. I mean, they are in different stages of life, but, there's no biblical, like, hey, don't do that thing. It's more just go into it, enjoying every moment you got, knowing that you might not have as many as, and you might get to do it again when with okay. the next guy.
I yeah. suppose they don't have an argument against that.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
is this love?
Yeah, I mean, so like the some of the more practical things that she mentioned, I think you're going to have to figure out, right? If he wants to go traveling and she's working, I mean, what are you going to do? You all right with it being gone, or you know what's the?
Yeah.
So I mean, I think you need to answer those questions. Mm-hmm. But I mean, here, actually, I'll put it this way. If you can figure out a way to resolve those types of questions, then I think you're going to be just fine.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, if it's something where you're, that seems like an argument and it's not something you're going to be able to resolve, it's a pretty, pretty good indicator that you shouldn't latch on forever.
Yeah. Put God at the center, fall in love with each other, get married, and be happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boom. All right. It's time, or Secular says, it's time for you to start compiling a list of the pros and cons of this romance. You and this man are at different stages of life. Dan, did you write this? And have very different goals. If you really want to have a family and a career, you will have to sacrifice something for it. And that something may be devoting much more time to this man. Sorry, but something's got to give.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's true in every relationship.
Thank,
yeah.
thank you for quoting three romantic comedies in your answer, Secular.
Just write down 10 things you hate about him.
Nice. I mean, what is the deal with the... I can't remember. If he's content with grandchildren, does it imply he already has children?
Right.
Yeah.
Or, I mean...
Is he saying he doesn't want children now?
Otherwise, I mean, what's the difference to him?
Right. Well, maybe that's a deal. Is this dude's already had kids, has them, and is out, and she's wanting to start a family of her own, not taking the kids from his previous relationships and start... Like, a 50-some-odd-year-old dude starting fresh with a baby.
I have no desire to do that.
Right. Like, that's rough. I'm a 25-year-old dude, and I love kids, but that sounds exhausting right now. I can't imagine being double my age plus and then going, all right, I'd like to start this over again.
I just want to have a good bowel movement every day. I don't care if there's kids around.
Yeah. Dan,
Dan bring
I just
it
wanted
home.
To sound old.
Dan
he
hits a high bar there.
Secular says Dan just wants a good bowel movement. All right. You ready for another one?
Yeah.
Dear Live from the Path, recently, my husband and I were walking down the sidewalk in our neighborhood and came across $160 in cash strewn all over the ground.
Ew.
What?
Sweet.
That's like $100. Oh, wow. Okay. We picked it up, and as we were doing so, our neighbor came outside. We knew her husband had just gotten home, and the money was near his car, so we asked if it might be his. We handed her the cash and told her to let us know. I feel like that could be handled very quickly and just by going, hey, is this your husband's money? Yes or no. But whatever. 2 weeks have gone by, and no one has claimed it.
Well, of course not.
Our neighbor still has it in her possession and has mentioned in passing that we should spend it on toys for our kids or food slash drinks at the next get-together. Well, here we go. While I think these are okay ideas, I'm a little bitter because my husband and I found the money, and I feel we should be the ones who get to keep it if no one comes forward to claim it. I don't want to damage the friendship we have with our neighbors, but I feel like we're losing a bit. What do you think? I was really hoping this was going to be an altruistic thing that's just like, hey, man, shouldn't they be calling the authorities or figuring out what to do with this? It's like, no, that money's ours if no one claims it, right?
I mean, if it's outside in the lawn and it wasn't the neighbors, obviously it's not, or they would have said, oh, yeah, that's ours, then it is kind of weird of the neighbors to keep it.
Yeah, maybe they spent it.
I was going to say, that's the perfect ruse right there, is if you have a trusting friend, you're just going to keep going, oh, nobody's claimed it yet.
Someday.
We'll see you next year. It's like 30 years now. Janice, we spent that back in 2017. I don't know what you're talking about.
It was a good time.
It was a great time. We spent it on toys for the kids.
I mean, do they bear any responsibility for being really weird about how they've gone about this? Mm-hmm. Like, why? I wouldn't just hand it to them.
I would check.
Example. Hey, did your husband drop 160 bones?
No.
Let me go ask him. Not, hey, take this money. Let us know if you're going to keep it.
Yeah. I feel like waiting 2 weeks is ridiculous. Like, I'd want to know the next day. It's like, hey, you remember that over $100 I found and handed to you?
He was home. Just wait.
Unless this is like Forrest Gump and you have to go on a run to get to the end of the driveway to talk to your husband, I get that. Maybe.
Right.
I'd be willing to run down a driveway for $160, though, just saying.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a ridiculous way to do this. Hey, we're going to send you this $160. Send us a fax or like a carrier pigeon. Let us know if this is your husband's or not. We'll await your letter like we're crossing the sea for
you. It's like a reverse fraud. Like, it's how you defraud people. You send them crap in the mail. I'm like, well, you kept it, so you owe me $28. But they've done the exact opposite in the most foolish way possible.
Right.
Yeah.
Who hands over $160?
So here's the thing.
That was somebody that just had a good heart, but just put themselves in the wrong situation.
Well, I mean, you're being kinder than I'm going to be here, Nick.
I just try to be kind in all situations.
Like, and bless you. I mean, bless you for that. But here's what I'm saying.
It was foolish.
They bear some responsibility for acting like a couple of fools. Here.
They did. Yeah. They
we have money. Did. Is this yours? Let us know later.
So although I feel like the neighbor should give it back to them, I think that is the otherwise right thing to do. They may have lost claim on the right handling of this situation by acting dumb within it. And so I feel like they're just going to have to let it go.
Yeah.
Just let it go. Yeah, otherwise, they're going to have to out themselves with handling it dumb, and that's not worth 160 bones.
Right.
That's
agree.
True.
Secular says, I think that before handing over the money, you should have had your neighbor ask her husband if he had lost any and how much. Ooh.
I like right. It.
Because you didn't do that and they have the cash, perhaps.
Oh, wait a minute. Would that produce a very odd situation? Well, I lost $90. What the heck? Two people lost money in the lawn at the same time?
Right.
That's true. That's a very odd point. Is it a guess or did they
confirm,
legit
though,
lose
that?
I get it. Right, so if he says, it was $200.
Of course I lost
money. Like, ha-ha! No, right. Yeah, it's the same thing as like when you turn in a phone, you don't just get handed the phone. They go, well, what's the phone look like?
Was it like 40 quarters?
Right.
No. No.
Was it $1.50? Multiply that by 100. Because you didn't do that and they have the cash, perhaps you should remind her that, per her suggestion, you would love to spend some of it on toys for your kids, and ask for some or all of it back. Mm-hmm. If she's a good neighbor, she'll agree. Ooh. If not, you will have learned an expensive lesson.
Yeah. Wait, it didn't cost you anything. It wasn't your $160.
No.
It's a free lesson. Let them keep it.
It's a free lesson. You just lost out on the possibility of more.
Mm-hmm. I don't need no $80 to buy a bunch of toys for my kids.
No,
I can always trying to get rid of that stuff.
Right, exactly.
I don't want to be committed because then the neighbor's going to ask, "What'd you buy? Fire truck, racquetball?" And then I gotta show them.
Yeah, exactly. I went to the Goodwill and bought like 800 things with $160.
Right, I've given my neighbor permission to inquire about the type of toys I buy for my children, and that is worth $80 for me not to have to answer that question.
Exactly.
You keep it.
Agreed. Yeah, this is yours. All right, we got time for one more.
Yeah, one more.
Dear Live from the Path, I have a good friend I always invite to attend parties and events. She invariably RSVPs accepting the invitation, but never shows up or explains her absence.
What does that mean? What does the RSVP mean?
What does RSVP mean?
Yeah, what does it stand for?
Rendezvous, s'il vous plaît.
What?
Isn't that it?
Something like it's French or something.
Yeah, it's Rendezvous, s'il vous plaît.
Nick Harris, what are your thoughts? Country of origin.
Yeah, I got blank right there.
Responde, s'il vous plaît.
Oh, gotcha.
Please respond or reply. Reply if you please. Literally, it is reply if you please.
Oh, cool.
Okay. That's sorry, cool. I feel like it's going to make a difference here. Go ahead. Turkey.
She invariably RSVPs accepting the invitation, but never shows up or explains her absence. This has been going on for years, and it hurts my feelings. Do I have to keep inviting her?
No.
No. No.
These, okay.
Am I bound by the rules of the universe?
Number one, slap yourself. That's a stupid question. Number two, slap yourself. You're still inviting her.
Okay. I have to say, I love when we get Dear Live from the Past that are deep and we really have to break stuff down, like, and really, really have to figure stuff out between us. But, like, these ones are always my favorite of, like, I'm hosting a party and Carol brought over something to cook. Should she be cooking it in my oven or should it have already been cooked? It's like, how catty are these old biddies sitting there?
The color of her rollers don't match my ceramic.
Right, exactly. Like, seriously. There is you are not bound by social nicety or contract to keep inviting Carol. Like, you do not ever have to do that.
So here, realistically, here's what I would do. I would call Carol on the phone, or probably text, say, Carol, you ever coming?
Right.
What you think? How you shallow, never come, what are your thoughts?
How shallow is your friendship that you have to sit there and wait by the friggin' Facebook and just sit there and go, I wonder if she's going to RSVP. Responde, s'il vous plaît, or whatever it was.
Yeah, I had, in fact, I had a deal where there was me and a couple of fellas went out for breakfast, I think like a month and a half ago, And the one guy, I mean, it had been 20 minutes. And you know what I did? I sent him a text. I said, hey, man, you coming? Because you said you was going to come. You going to come?
Right.
No, I ain't going to make it. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
We're going to hash brown without you.
Yeah. And that's the end of it. It doesn't have to be like, well, you will never be invited again. You're a terrible human being. I've been doing this for years. I can't. No, just stop being catty. Stop being petty. Just go, okay.
Or, I mean, like, it's weird that what she proposed, which was, hey, can I stop inviting her? Like, my reaction would be reach out to Carol and say, Carol, why do you keep saying you're going to come if you're not going
to
come?
Yeah, you do not have to show up to my parties if you don't. It is more of an inconvenience to me for you saying you are going to show up and then not showing up than it would hurt my feelings for you to just originally say, eh, probably not going to show up to that party.
Yeah. If I invite a dude out for dinner and I never hear back from him, I assume he's not coming.
However, yeah, we are being nice in this situation. Dan kind of wasn't. I appreciate that part. But, like, yeah, stop inviting her. Or you're ridiculous. The person who wrote this is ridiculous for going, well, I'd like to keep up, keep face and stuff like that. I want to save face in this situation. I'm going to keep inviting this person, and we're going to see what happens. I'm going to be hurt and ridiculously petty about it, but I want to figure out how this is her fault, not mine. Yeah. No, you're just being weird for continually inviting her, knowing at this point, this is a pattern, right? This is years. You know she's not going to show up.
That's what I don't understand, though. Like, how have you gone years without bringing this up? It just, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, like, do you run into Carol at a basketball game and just be like, hey, Carol, do you remember the 14 parties you haven't showed up to?
Yeah, I mean, what is
I do.
What
I have RSVP screenshots of every one.
She's got to be three states over. Like, if she's not, if she's in town and you've never said, Carol, how come you don't respond to this? Or is everything all right, Carol? You said you was going to come and you didn't, like a normal friend would. Like, if she's not a friend, then stop inviting her. If she's a friend, then you're a bad friend. Why don't you call Carol and see why she's not showing up?
Right.
In either case, if you've done either one of those two things, you wouldn't be asking this question right here.
All right. Secular says, allow me to offer you some insight, oh buddy. The woman's behavior is extremely rude.
Yes, no doubt.
Good friends do not treat each other this way. If you're asking my permission to scratch her off your guest list, you have it.
Unnecessary.
Full period.
No. No, I mean, here's the, I 50% agree, but half of this sits on this woman for acting like a boob.
Yeah, Secular, thank you for giving this woman more fire in her belly to make it so that she has been wronged. Ridiculous.
You've been listening to Life from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. If that was you, I mean, you need to change your ways. It's not my problem. Anyway, if you need some more advice, or if you're in the wrong and you want to be validated in that, shoot us an email, info@lifefromthepath.org. We are here to help. Hopefully Nick Harris will be here. He'll be nicer than I will. And Dan will react firmly, but appropriately in this particular circumstance. Thanks for hanging out with us. We will see you next week. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Life from the Path.